Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My total taxes, payroll taxes plus income tax, mine came to 17.7%. The average for the office was 32.9%. There wasn't anybody in the office from the receptionist on up that paid as low a tax rate.
Guess who that was? That was Warren Buffett, the billionaire investor, making the point that one of the richest men in the world himself was paying a lower tax rate than his secretary. Now, a lot of people don't understand this. So today, our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, continues. As we talk about McCain, Obama, and taxes, the candidates have been talking a lot about their tax policies and debating the merits and who redistributes wealth for the benefit of whom. But frankly, people, you want to know how this will affect your own income taxes, right? So before we get into the policy debate, we're going to start with the personal. What are the actual implications of the tax policies that these candidates have laid out in dollars and cents? So joining us to give some rough outlines of how much you would be paying in taxes under a John McCain or a Barack Obama administration, we have Clint Stretch as our first guest. He's the managing principal of tax policy for Deloitte Tax. Clint, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
And we're going to open up the phones, 212-433-WNYC. We can't expect Clint to know the exact tax bill for every particular situation, every income and married or with kids or whatever. But, you know, we can take a rough stab at the difference. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's just take one scenario right off the bat that you've come up with. If you're married with two kids under 17 and you make $80,000, well, tell us the difference.
Well, I think what you'll find in that case is that under the McCain plan, because of the two children, you'll save about $700 because of the increased exemption amount that he gives. Under the Obama plan, you'd save about $1,000 a year, and that's attributable to the work credit, assuming that it's a double-earning couple. If it's a single-earning couple, just one worker, well, then the savings would be $500.
All right. So there's a new child tax credit in the McCain plan that's different even than the Bush tax cuts that he wants to extend?
That's right. It's not really a tax credit. He increases the personal exemption with respect
to your kids.
So that's worth between $230 and $800 a kid. The more income you have, the higher your tax bracket, the more that benefit is for you. So for the lower bracket people, it's a $230 benefit. For people in the top bracket, it's an $800 benefit.
But even with that additional personal exemption, the $80,000 married couple with two kids under 17 would get a bigger tax break under Obama, you tell us.
That's correct, assuming they're both working. If only one's working, then they would get a smaller benefit.
And that's just from cutting the rates, the actual rates that people pay in income tax at that income level?
What Obama does is he gives you basically a refund of the Social Security tax that you pay on your first $8,500 of earnings. So that's worth about $500 a person.
Now, scenario B, if you're single, no kids, and you make $120,000, single, no kids, $120,000, does anything change?
Nope, you're not going to get anything from either of them. You don't have any dependents, so you're not going to get something from the McCain plan, and you'll be too high up in the income scale to benefit from the work credit that I just talked about.
For the Obama, but the ending of the Bush tax cuts for people in upper incomes, that wouldn't kick in for this single person making $120,000.
Right.
They would make too little money for their taxes to go up under the Obama plan.
Absolutely right. Under the Obama plan, nobody pays more in tax until they get to $200,000 for a single person, $250,000 for married couples.
All right, let's go there. Married, no kids, $200,000 income. Try that one.
Well, you're not going to see any change with respect to the Obama plan because the rate increase is not going to be there. Under the McCain plan, you will see about a $1,200 savings, and that's, again, because of this higher exemption amount for your kids. Now, I should say, with respect to the Obama plan, that there are much liberalized college credits and things like that. So it is possible that that couple would qualify for some additional tuition relief if those two kids happen to be in college.
Oh, that was, I'm sorry, I thought that we were talking about married no kids and $200,000.
Oh, I'm sorry, married no kids, and there's no change under either of the plans.
At $200,000.
Right. Correct.
Now, let me linger there for a minute and ask what it would have been before the Bush tax cuts, and those tax cuts are technically temporary. And Congress has to decide whether to make them permanent or not. So is it possible to say in 1999 what these married couples making $200,000 with no kids, would be paying in taxes compared to now? How Bush changed it for them?
Well, it actually is, because all that Senator Obama is it's not, because I haven't done the numbers. It would be possible, but Senator Obama is making the Bush tax cuts permanent for that income couple. So is John McCain. And so it's not really anything we've looked at to run the numbers on, because it doesn't matter. Nobody is proposing from either political perspective to raise the taxes on this $200,000 couple. Going back to the Clinton policy, that Obama goes back to the Clinton policy for high-income people, above $250,000 for married couples, and McCain says, no, we're going to stay with the Bush policy throughout.
All right.
So we haven't run the numbers. I mean, it's possible, just haven't done it.
Let's try another one. If you're married, two kids under 17, and your income is way up at $430,000, which would mean you're in the top few percent in the country.
Sure.
And your income comes not just from regular salaries, but also capital gains and dividends, as is usually the case if you're making that much money. Then what happens to you? So we're at two kids under 17, $430,000 total income, some from salary and some from capital gains and dividends.
Well, what you're going to see there is that, first of all, John McCain is not going to change their taxes at all. He would make the Bush tax cuts permanent, and they would still have an alternative minimum tax problem in that bracket, so that they would be paying under present law and under John McCain some amount of AMT. When Obama increases the top individual rates, they're going to pay, I think, about $1,600 more in that couple. That's not as big a tax increase as you would have thought just from the rate changes, but that's because they're already paying AMT, and so the effect of changing the rates isn't as dramatic for them.
All right. Now, we have a couple of people calling in with questions, I guess, about themselves. Rick in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rick.
Hi, guys. So I got screwed on the economic stimulus plan because my wife and my combined income was $207,000, and we got nothing. So I'm wondering, when Obama says that if you make less than $250,000, your taxes won't go up, he never said if that was for an individual or for a family, and maybe I just missed it. Maybe you just went through that, but that's what I want to know.
Okay, it's $200,000 for an individual, $250,000 for a family. So if you're at $207,000, you're not going to pay any more under the Obama plan.
Worth $50,000.
Sorry, Rick, the first part of that got clipped. What'd you say?
Well, I said, so the spouse is worth $50,000, and my wife makes more than I do. So I guess I'm only worth $50,000 here, and she's worth $200,000.
Well, or on the, yeah, maybe, I don't know.
All right, thank you, fellas. Appreciate
thank
it.
You very much. Bob on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I know I'm probably a unique case, but I make about $80,000, and I have five children. I pay no taxes. I didn't. In fact, with the stimulus package, they actually paid me back on that. And I get worried about this country that we have so many people paying absolutely nothing in taxes.
Now, do you pay so little because your child deductions?
Child tax credit. The Bush tax credit is $1,000 per child.
Okay. Now, was that new? Let me ask our guest. Was that new, Clint? Under the Bush administration, that child tax credit, or at that level?
At that level. It was 500 in the Clinton years. The Bush policy took it to 1,000. And what Bob is pointing out is one of the concerns that people have in the back of their minds, that close to half of the country is not paying income tax, either because they don't earn enough or because, like Bob, they have a lot of children or other circumstances come up. And so it leaves the income tax burden on the other folks. Now, of course, Bob is probably paying a boatload of Social Security tax as he goes along. But that is one of the issues we have in this system right now.
All right. Now, let me play a clip. This is Senator Obama talking about a health care tax credit and what he sees of McCain's health program.
Senator McCain talked about providing a $5,000 health credit. Now, what he doesn't tell you is that he intends to, for the first time in history, tax health benefits. So you may end up getting a $5,000 tax credit. Here's the only problem. Your employer now has to pay taxes on the health care that you're getting from your employer. And if you end up losing your health care from your employer, you've got to go out on the open market and try to buy it. It is not a good deal for the American people, but it's an example of this notion that the market can always solve everything and that the less regulation we have, the better off we're going to be.
So reading between the lines of those numbers, would that be considered a tax increase?
Well, I think in fairness to Senator McCain, he has not said that treatment would be mandatory. He said you can keep your employer exclusion or you can have the tax credit.
Uh-huh.
And so you're quickly going to walk into a conversation with yourself. Is it better to get, $10,000 of tax-free benefit, or should I take the $5,000 cash credit and go out and buy that? If you gave up the benefit, that's worth at a top rate $3,500 because you're just excluding it from tax. On the other hand, employers providing it. So I think there is going to be one of the purposes of John McCain's plan is to put some tension in the system, force people to make a choice as to what is economically better for them. They may choose to purchase on their own, use the tax credit to help do that. If that would be particularly true for younger employees. If a lot of younger employees at a job site were to take that election, then the employer might very well say, I'm not sure I want to provide this. It's getting expensive just for the older folks. And the employer might get out of the system. So, yes, John McCain is very much in favor of a free market solution, which Senator Obama said. Senator Obama may have overdrawn it a bit because John McCain is not forcing people to make a choice. But, practically, when you sit down and push the numbers, a lot of folks might not want to make that choice.
Let's take another question from Alex in Brooklyn. Alex, you're on WNYC.
Hi there. I'm wondering on that making the health care benefits taxable, whether that means just income tax or payroll tax or the employee and the employer payroll tax, and that adds up to like 28%, and then the impact of that on my state and local taxes, because all of that adds up to like more than 50% for a middle-class taxpayer. And I'll take my question or answer off the air.
Thank you for your call.
That's a great question, Alex asked. Presumably, Congress could write it any way they wanted to, but if they simply did what Senator McCain is talking about, which is getting rid of the exclusion, well, then it would be subject to all those taxes. Whether it was subject to state tax would depend on whether the state followed federal law, which, a lot of them do in one way or another. So yes, you could very well end up with Social Security tax on it and state tax on it in addition to the federal income tax.
All right. Let's see. How does this compare to the rates that people paid under the Clinton administration overall, if we go back that far?
Well, if you go back to the Clinton administration rates, Obama would simply reimpose those rates for people over $250,000 for a couple or $200,000 for a single. McCain would keep the Bush rate. So, you know, McCain is going, if you will, back to Bush policy, and Obama's going back to Clinton policy. But then they both provide more generous tax treatment for people in the middle class, either through the exemption increase that McCain has or the work credit and other benefits that Obama has. So one of the things that's interesting is neither of these gentlemen is proposing that the federal government collect in total more individual income tax.
Bill, I'm sorry.
They're actually both suggesting the federal government collect less total individual income tax than it did during the Bush years.
Bill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
What's your question?
About 2 to 3 weeks ago, Bill O'Reilly in his program on Fox asked Obama in an interview, he said that under the tax cut policy of Bush, the federal government brought in about 20 to 25% more money than ever before. And O'Reilly said this is proof that Bush's tax policy is working. Now, Obama didn't reply to that. He didn't say, no, it's not. He didn't say his figures are wrong. He really didn't know what to say. I'm asking you, do you know what O'Reilly was talking about? Is he correct?
I don't know what numbers he was using in particular. It's clear that we've had good revenue receipts in some years, and we've had poor revenue receipts in other years. And I think what's interesting about Senator Obama's proposal is he's not really proposing that we collect more revenue. He's proposing that we collect it differently.
And now he says, this is another thing that maybe you could fact check, that even with the changes that Obama would bring, you know, to the Bush tax system, that it would all be revenue neutral. The government wouldn't be taking in any more money, even though they would be raising marginal income tax rates on that top 1% or so. Do you know that to be true?
If you look at the individual income tax, it's more than true in the sense that we would take in less individual income tax. If you throw in the estate and gift tax, it's about, I think, revenue neutral in the aggregate. Now, over on the corporate income tax side, Obama would raise more corporate income tax than we collect currently.
All right. Well, we are going to leave it there for part one of this conversation. Clint Stretch, Managing Principal of Tax Policy for Deloitte Tax. Thanks for crunching the numbers for us. That was really good.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC in our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series, issue 11, taxes. You've heard some of the numbers. Now we'll debate it out with someone who thinks Obama's right, someone who does not and thinks McCain is right. Stay with us.
WNYC is supported by the New York Botanical Garden, presenting More in America, the interaction of art and nature in the exhibit of 20 Henry Moore sculptures located 20 minutes from Grand Central. More at nybg.org. The New School, offering an MA in teaching English to speakers of other languages, taught online or coupled with a summer residency. Open house tonight at 6 p.m., 66 West 12th Street, newschool.edu/MATESOL. JerseyArts.com, presenting American masterpieces, three centuries of artistic genius, featuring Deliverance, the art of Ben Jones. The artist's work from the mid-70s through his most recent paintings is on view at the Jersey City Museum. Details at JerseyArts.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Lopate. Execution by guillotine wasn't eliminated in France until the early 1980s. On my next show, French lawyer Robert Badinter talks about his fight to end the death penalty there and what the U.S. can learn from France's example, plus Ian Baruma on his new novel, The China Lover. That and lots more on The Leonard Lopate Show, weekdays at noon and 93.9 and AMA 20 WNYC.
Time to be patriotic, Kate. Time to jump in. Time to be part of the deal.
In the middle class of America, which is where Todd and I have been, you know, all of our lives, that's not patriotic.
All right. You recognize those voices. Do the candidates' positions on taxes signal a fundamental difference about the role of government? It's 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 11 in our presidential election series, taxes. So let's get a debate going. The American economy is losing jobs every month right now. In September, we lost 159,000 jobs, twice as many jobs as in August. And when a $700 billion bailout package was just signed into law, how can we assume anything but tax increases in the coming administration? To go over details and arguments on either side, we are joined by John Talbot, former investment banker at Goldman Sachs and author of the book Obamanomics, How Bottom-Up Economic Prosperity Will Replace Trickle-Down Economics. And any moment we will have Steve Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board and a senior economics writer there, formerly from the Pro-Free Market Club for Growth. So, John Talbot, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this.
No, thanks for having me.
And here's another clip. Let's set this up with a slightly longer clip from last week's vice presidential debate. First, Joe Biden lays out the Obama tax plan, and then you'll hear Sarah Palin's response.
Where I come from, it's called fairness, just simple fairness. The middle class is struggling. The middle class under John McCain's tax proposals, 100 million families, middle class families, households to be precise. They got not a single change. They got not a single break in taxes. No one making less than $250,000 under Barack Obama's plan will see one single penny of their tax raise, whether it's their capital gains tax, their income tax, investment tax, any tax. And 95% of the people in the United States of America making less than $150,000 will get a tax break. Now, that seems to me to be simple fairness. The economic engine of America is the middle class. It's the people listening to this broadcast. When you do well, America does well. Even the wealthy do well. This is not punitive.
Governor?
I do take issue with some of the principle there, with that redistribution of wealth principle that seems to be espoused by you. But when you talk about Barack's plan to tax increase affecting only those making $250,000 a year or more, you're forgetting the millions of small businesses that are going to fit into that category. So they're going to be the ones paying higher taxes, thus resulting in fewer jobs being created and less productivity. Now, you said recently that higher taxes or asking for higher taxes or paying higher taxes is patriotic. In the middle class of America, which is where Todd and I have been, you know, all of our lives, that's not patriotic.
All right. And there, after Joe Biden and Sarah Palin went round on that, there is a question implied, callers. Do you feel patriotic on April 15th when you pay your taxes? The Biden quote was that the people in the top 1%, over 250,000 or so, and we'll talk later in the hour, by the way, about who really is middle class, who should be considered middle class. We'll play what Obama and McCain have each had to say about that. But should it be seen as a matter of patriotism, or is it somehow an abomination, as Palin and others have suggested, to call paying your taxes an act of patriotism? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We're still trying to connect Stephen Moore's line. We're having trouble with that phone connection, but we do have John Talbot, author of Obamanomics, How Bottom-Up Economic Prosperity Will Replace Trickle-Down Economics. John, does your subtitle about sum up how you see Obama's approach to the economy, Trickle-Up Economics?
You know, I'm not surprised you're having trouble raising Steve Moore. Before I got on, I was thinking to myself, this might be the easiest debate I've ever had in my life.
Well,
but he made it easier for me without Stephen on the line.
Right. Well, he'll be there anyway.
The reason I say that is this isn't about one party wanting to increase taxes and one party wanting to cut taxes. Neither of these candidates' plans involves increasing taxes in total. McCain, some of his plan can be a little bit suspect in that he hasn't said how he's going to pay for a $300 billion tax cut for the rich, but all of Obama's tax plans are paid for. And so the difference between the two plans is that McCain is going to cut taxes on people making over $250,000, and Obama is going to cut taxes on everybody else and raise taxes on people making over $250,000.
So Sarah Palin, in her clip there, called that redistribution of wealth, which implies a kind of government socialism. What do you think about that term?
Well, it is sort of a redistribution of wealth, but so was the redistribution of wealth under Bush that gave the wealthiest people in this country all this income. I mean, Bush is the one in 2002 that cut the rates on the wealthiest, and it resulted in a $3 to $4 trillion windfall to the wealthiest 10% of Americans. And what did they do with the money? It was supposed to trickle down into new jobs and growth. That didn't happen. There were something like 22 million jobs created under Bill Clinton. There's less than 4 million under Bush, and the number's dropping every day as unemployment increases. And the GDP growth we've seen under Bush is highly suspect. Not only is the cumulative GDP growth over his entire 8 years very, very weak, but it looks now like it's phony, that it was absolutely generated from a doubling in government debt and spending on wars around the world, and a more than doubling of consumer debt, mostly borrowing against your house and going out and buying cars and vacations that you couldn't afford. So, I don't think there's any argument that, you know, everybody's in favor of lower taxes, but if it all it does is just result in greater deficits, like we've seen under the Bush years, you know, the government's in no stronger position, and therefore, you know, it's hard for the economy to perform.
I think now we do have Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board on with us. Stephen, can you hear me?
Hello, Brian.
Thanks for doing this, and you're on with John Talbot, author of Obamanomics. I don't know how much of that last answer that you heard, but he was reacting to the clip of Sarah Palin from the debate last week where she was calling the Obama tax plan redistribution of wealth. And John Talbot said, among other things, that redistribution of wealth is, you know, it's an easy slur to throw around to somebody who wants to raise taxes on some of the population. But what Bush did is no less redistribution of wealth than what Obama is suggesting. Is that a fair point?
Well, no, because Bush didn't raise taxes on anybody. And the Obama plan is a massive increase on people in the top two income tax brackets. And so this, the intention, I mean, it's clear the intention of the Obama plan is to try to, you know, cut taxes on lower income people and increase taxes, you know, very dramatically on the wealth producers and the small businessmen and the companies. And,
well, is it not a redistribution of wealth anyway if the government's coffers are depleted to some degree so that the wealthiest few percent can pay lower taxes? Does that not redistribute wealth from the public sector to, you know, for whatever, you know, roads and schools and whatever they use government money for, defense, to the richest individuals?
Well, no, because actually the tax share paid by the wealthy in the last 4 years has really dramatically increased. It hasn't fallen. So there haven't been, if you look at the statistics that just came out from the IRS, the share of taxes paid by the top 1%, 5%, and 10% is greater now than it has been at any time. If you look at the capital gains and dividend tax cuts, those actually have raised revenues. So where has been the tax cut on rich people?
But the reason the rich are paying more taxes is they're making more income, according to a Wall Street Journal article from a couple of weeks ago. Since Bush took office, the wealthiest or the richest 10% of Americans have gone from earning 9% of the country's income to earning 22% of the income.
Well, that's not true, but in any case, I mean,
I'm citing the Wall Street Journal. Are you telling me the Wall Street Journal is not accurate?
Yeah, I'm afraid that statistic isn't true. But here's the not in the last.
Can you tell me what's wrong with your cited Street Journal?
I don't want to go one stat, but Stephen Moore, go ahead.
My only point is just
that cited from his own source.
I don't work for the news page. I work for the Journal editorial page. We're a totally separate operation. But here's the point. You know, if you look at what happened with the capital gains and dividend tax cuts and the income tax rate cuts at the top, almost everyone who's looked at those indicate that those have actually raised revenue for the government. That is, we've gotten more money from those taxes than we would have if we hadn't cut the taxes. So if Obama comes in and raises those taxes, I think there's a high chance that we're actually going to lose revenue. That was one of the points that was made to Obama in the debate. Why raise the capital gains tax when it actually loses revenue? And he said, I want to do this because it's fair. But how is it fair if it loses revenue for the government to do it?
John Talbot, that's an argument that we frequently hear from Stephen Moore's side of this, which is that lowering capital gains taxes and sometimes some other taxes on the top earners actually results in more revenue to the government because it spurs more economic growth. Do you disagree with that?
I absolutely disagree. It's a completely phony argument, and it's difficult to debate. I always dislike debating McCain's supporters because their whole modus operandi, driven by Karl Rove, is to ignore all facts and just state theories. I mean, you can't ignore a Wall Street Journal report that says the wealthiest 10% doubled the amount of income that they earned. And to have somebody from the Wall Street editorial page claim he's not associated with that paper is mind-boggling.
I'm not with the news department. Let me play moderator here, you guys.
Okay, I think we can stipulate that one columnist is not responsible for every stat that shows up in the newspaper. But John Talbot, go ahead and make your case.
To address his exact point here, it's completely ludicrous. The capital gains tax cut may generate initial revenues to the government because people know it's a windfall. They know they can sell assets around the world that have very little basis and generate greater revenue initially. But that doesn't mean in the long term it generates revenue. And we don't have to think, we don't have to talk about theory. All we have to do is look at the Bush years. He cut rates on dividends and interest. He cut rates on the wealthiest, and he drove a surplus of $250 billion a year that he inherited from Reuben and Clinton into a $500 billion deficit this year, and now the recession starts. So it's easy to see this becoming a $700 billion plus deficit.
All right. Stephen Moore, go ahead.
Well, the technology bubble burst in 1999 and 2000, a year before Bush was president. I mean, the revenues collapsed after the technology bubble burst. But all I'm saying is that if you look at what happened on the capital gains tax, I mean, these are just official statistics right out of the IRS, that the amount of revenue raised over the 4 years since we cut the capital gains tax doubled from $50 billion to $100 billion. That's just a fact. I mean, you can't make up your own facts, and the facts are we got more revenue with a 15% capital gains tax. So why would you want to raise it back up to 20%. It just doesn't make any sense.
I try to explain that the great majority of assets in the world are held at very, very low basis. And when people see an absolute windfall, once-in-a-lifetime low capital gains rate, what they do is they go sell those assets.
That's my point.
And you see
We agree.
Good.
You see capital gains taxes go up, but that doesn't mean your country's any better off.
All right. Since on that point of agreement, here is an exchange in the presidential debate about corporate loopholes.
What I do is I close corporate loopholes, stop providing tax cuts to corporations that are shipping jobs overseas so that we're giving tax breaks to companies that are investing here in the United States.
Now, according to a report released last month by the GAO, two of every three U.S. corporations paid no federal income taxes from 1998 to 2005, which could signal that a lot of corporations are finding ways to move their tax burden overseas or otherwise get out of paying what might be their fair share. Stephen Moore, how do you react to that stat combined with that clip?
Yeah, I think our corporate tax structure is an abomination, and I think that we have to completely scrap the corporate income tax because we have the worst of all worlds. We have the second highest corporate tax rates statutorily, but we get very little revenue from it. So it's a bad tax system because most of the cost of the corporate taxes goes into compliance costs, and it is. I mean, John McCain is right about this, that our corporate tax structure is moving companies offshore, just as you said, and so What I would favor, and what McCain favors, is cutting our corporate tax rate, at least till, so it's the average of the European and Asian countries, which I think would be good from a start. But I think ultimately we should probably scrap that corporate income tax and move towards something like a value-added tax that gets at the broad base of corporate tax corporate activity, but it doesn't have this dramatic effect of reducing the competitiveness of American businesses, which hurts all workers.
John Talbot, what about Obamanomics and that?
Yeah, I mean, McCain tried to make this same point in the debate, that he was going to stimulate economic activity by reducing the corporate tax rate from 35 to 25%. Complete and utter nonsense. No corporation I know of, certainly no Fortune 500 company, pays 35% in corporate taxes. It's an absolute statutory rate only. There are millions and millions of loopholes around it. I don't think General Electric has paid a dollar of tax in 35 years. It would have no effect to change the statutory rate from 35% to 25%. You have to close the loopholes. Again, it's just absolutely phony policy.
Stephen Moore says it's incentive for the companies to locate offshore. If you just have the taxes be on the individuals, on their income, rather than on the corporations, then the companies will stay here, and more of the money, I guess, would wind up being taxable, his argument is. John.
Yeah. The major corporations I know are not located offshore. I know there's lots of examples of smaller companies in the Cayman Islands, et cetera. But you don't have to locate offshore to avoid paying U.S. taxes if you're a corporation. U.S. corporations have been paying hundreds of millions and billions of dollars to your congressman every year in the form of campaign donations to make sure they don't have to pay much U.S. tax.
Stephen Moore on that?
I think we can agree again. I mean, I think we're making the same point, that our corporate income tax structure doesn't work. It doesn't raise much revenue. And he's right. The system is rife with loopholes that have been put in because of corporate campaign contributions. And so, you know, what I'm suggesting is we completely lower the rate as low as possible, if not scrap that system, and have a much broader base of tax on corporate activity. I mean, what's going on around this is really an important thing for your listeners to understand. You can talk about how foolish it is to cut tax rates and so on. It doesn't work. But it's happening all over the world. Just last week, Sweden, which is one of the most socialist countries in the world, cut their corporate tax from 30% to 25%. All these countries are cutting their corporate tax rate to become more competitive. The country in the world that has had the highest growth rate for the last 10 years has been Ireland, and Ireland is operating with a 12% corporate tax rate. That's what we should be aiming for.
I want to play one more clip because Obama's plan calls for higher taxes on high-income Americans, by which he means families making more than $250,000 and single people making more than $200,000. He would cut taxes for lower and middle-income households. He says 95% of all Americans would see lower taxes. So what is lower and middle income? Palin and McCain have made the claim that Obama would raise taxes on people making $42,000. We've heard that claim a lot. Here's a clip of McCain during his presidential debate on that point.
Who is the person who has believed that the best thing for America is to have a tax system that is fundamentally fair? And I've fought to simplify it, and I have proposals to simplify it. Let's give every American a choice. Two tax brackets, generous dividends, and let Americans choose whether they want the existing tax code or they want a new tax code. And so, again, look at the record, particularly the energy bill. But again, Senator Obama has shifted on a number of occasions. He has voted in the United States Senate to increase taxes on people who make as low as $42,000 a year. And that's just a fact. Again, you can look it up.
All right. Before you both go, can you do the fact checking? Why do they not agree on whether Obama has voted to raise taxes on people making as little as $42,000 a year? John Talbot, author of Obamanomics, do you know what that figure refers to?
Yeah, I know exactly why they don't agree. It's because it's a lie. He lied about 20 times during that debate, and Obama was comfortable enough in his own credibility to just say, John, that's not the truth. I would have reacted much more violently. I mean, in that quote you just had, he talks about generous dividends. Who knows what he's talking about? Maybe he's talking about generous deductions. I don't know. But it's complete nonsense. I told you, everybody under $250,000, 95% of working families with children will get a tax cut under Obama. This is not about raising taxes. This is about more fairly taxing the wealthy like they were taxed under Clinton and taxing less the working American.
Stephen Moore, real briefly on the $42,000.
Well, what happened was, and I don't know all the details of this, but there were a number of what we call budget resolutions that the Democrats enacted over the last several years that that Obama voted in favor of that would have raised taxes on people making as little as $40,000 a year. I mean, I think the main point is that, look, no matter what Barack Obama says, I do think it's important to look at these guys' records, not their. Now, Barack Obama doesn't have much of a record because he hasn't been in the Senate very long, but Joe Biden has voted for virtually every tax increase for 30 years. And I do think if Americans go to the polls and they really believe that Joe Biden and Barack Obama are going to cut their taxes. I mean, look, I hope they do, but I think it's a myth. I think that they're going to try to raise taxes. And the final point to remember is this does not include any of the tax increase in something called the cap-and-trade bill that Obama and Biden are in favor. Unfortunately, McCain is for it, too. But that's the biggest tax increase on the middle class in American history,
that's
and they're
the
not
cap and,
including that.
Cap-and-trade on global warming. But the two... The two candidates agree on that. Before you both go, with all that you disagree on, am I right that you both oppose this bailout bill? John Talbot, did you oppose the bill?
Yes, I'm very strongly against it.
And personally. Stephen Moore, did you remain opposed to the bill even in its second version?
You know, I'm very much of mixed minds on it, but I think so far the market hasn't responded very well. It's down 700 points since we passed it.
Yikes.
I think it probably is the wrong remedy. I think John McCain would have been smart to oppose it because Obama was very much in favor of
it. Since there was so much pork in the final version, what happens to McCain's argument, Stephen Moore, that he's the big pork and earmarks buster?
Well, good point. I think that there is pork in this. Although, you know, this is a $700 billion bill, and the pork is probably, you know, a few tens of millions. I'm not saying that's not a lot of money, but
I'm not
excusing his vote because I actually told John I voted against it.
This bill did not fail because of the pork attached. It failed because it's a bad bill. It gives more cash to the banks but does nothing to their loss problems. And we don't have a liquidity problem right now. We have a capital solvency problem at our banks. And this is going to cause more losses to be recognized at the banks and a freezing up of more credit.
John Talbot, author of the book Obamanomics, Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, thank you both very much for debating issue 11, taxes and 30 issues in 30 days.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Tom.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will continue with the issue 11 addendum here in just a minute. We will ask, what is middle class? And we'll play Obama's and McCain's responses in a previous forum to that question. Wait till you hear how different they are. What is middle class?
WNYC support comes from National Research Alliance, dedicated to research and development, training and consumer education for the advancements of today's modern oil heat. More information at oilheatamerica.com. The Arkansas Economic Development Commission, helping companies find opportunity for business in the natural state. Information at arkansasedc.com.
Again and again, John McCain has been wrong and Barack Obama is right.
John McCain got it right and Barack Obama got it wrong.
There's a time for politics and a time to put our country first.
This is a fight for the future, and it's a fight we must win together.
Move behind the rhetoric with in-depth election coverage from WNYC.
By the way, for those of you who got scared when one of the guests there said that the Dow is down 700 points since the bailout bill passed. That is the total of Friday and today. It's not down 700 today, but it is down about 450 as of right now. Now, as part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series, we have a 30 Issues Wiki. It's not just a comments page. It's a way for you to collaborate with each other to help us produce six of our 30 Issues programs, suggest guests and questions, and audio clips, and more. Our next Wiki topic is energy for this Friday show. We want you to contribute. Check out the 30 Issues Wiki at wnyc.org/30issues. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and one of the sometimes amusing things to watch in any political campaign is how both candidates always say that they, not the other guy, are for the middle class. Well, that's certainly true. On the topic of our 30 Issues in 30 Days, issue 11 here this hour, which is taxes. And when they did the Rick Warren Saddleback Church Forum the other week, Pastor Warren asked both of them what they thought the definition of middle class was. And we thought we would play both of those exchanges, beginning with Rick Warren questioning Barack Obama.
Taxes. This is a real simple question. Define rich. Okay. Give me a number. Is it 50,000, 100,000, 200,000? Everybody keeps talking about well, who we're going to tax. Right. How do you define that?
You know, if you've got book sales of 25 million, then you qualify.
I'm not asking about me.
Look, here's how I think about it. Here's how I think about it. And this is reflected in my tax plan. If you are making $150,000 a year or less as a family, then you're middle class.
Middle class.
Or you may be poor, right? I mean, but 150 down, you're basically middle class. Obviously, it depends on region where you're living.
All right, 150,000, depending on the region where you're living. I'm sure he'd say more in New York. Listeners in the New York metropolitan area or listening on the World Wide Web, anywhere around the wide, wide world, give us a call and tell us how you define middle class where you live. How do you define? What's the number, if there is a number, is the cutoff for middle class at the low end or the top end? 212-433-WNYC. Call us right now. We just have a few minutes for this. 212-433-9692. And we'll go back into Rick Warren and hear his questioning of John McCain on the same issue.
Some of the richest people I've ever known in my life are the most unhappy. I think that rich should be defined by a home, a good job, an education, and the ability to hand to our children a more prosperous and safer world than the one that we inherited. I don't want to take any money from the rich. I want everybody to get rich. I don't believe in class warfare or redistribution of the wealth, but I can tell you, for example, there are small businessmen and women who are working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, that some people would classify as, quote, rich. I think if you're just talking about income, how about 5 million?
So there's a range, 150,000 for Obama to 5 million for McCain. With me now, Robert Frank, economics professor at Cornell and author of the book Falling Behind: How Rising Inequality Harms the Middle Class. He's a visiting professor at NYU this semester. Hi again, Robert Frank. How do you define middle class in your title there, in your book?
Yeah, you said it earlier, Brian. I think you've got to look to the local context. Wealth, middle, poor, all that is a strictly relative phenomenon. So I think if you're below the top earners, you're middle class. Almost everybody in America claims to be middle class. And I think in New York, if you're earning $250,000 a year, that's the level above which taxes will start to rise on people under the Obama proposal, you're barely above what we would consider middle class. In other cities, it would be much lower than that.
Joseph in Glen Rock, what's your number?
My number was 200,000, which is probably sort of the middle of the middle class range, which would go, as the gentleman said before, up to maybe 250,000.
For this,
it has to do with expected lifestyle, which is not too, which is paying for the necessities, paying for your future, meaning children's college, saving for retirement, having possibly one family vacation.
So that's your upper limit, roughly, of middle class, 200,000.
Yeah. So my
with kids.
My average, I would say, or sort of desirable income to maintain this would be about 200,000.
Right. Okay, Joseph, thank you very much. How about Alex in Brooklyn? Alex, you're on WNYC. How do you define middle class?
Yes, I don't know the exact number because it would take some calculations, but basically a family of four, which is an average today, two children and two working parents, being able to afford everyday necessities, meaning rent, bills, basic shopping, mm-hmm. and, you know, having a car. I'm not saying vacation because vacation getting more and more expensive, and obviously having paid their older debts.
Ooh, you think you can be middle class and not even be able to afford a vacation? So a couple of interesting answers already there, Robert Frank.
That's right, and I think the fact that there have been such big gains at the top of the income ladder accounts for why people in the middle are feeling a lot of pressure. The median family actually earns only about $60,000 a year, family of four. And those people are not saving any money for the most part. They're borrowing net each year. They're having a hard time meeting their mortgage payments now. Often they're in over their heads on their mortgages. They many of them don't have health insurance. So it's a tough standard of living for people who are really literally in the middle.
Monique in Tarrytown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Monique.
Hi. You know, as a family, we're in Tarrytown now for a year, and I have to tell you that context is really important. We've lived in Jackson, Mississippi. We've lived in Alexandria, Virginia, and I tell you, Westchester, you know, it's a different world. We're here because of my husband's work, and, you know, we have five children, and we don't have vacations. We don't have cable. You know, our vacations are basically going to see Grandma and Grandpa, And so a lot of it, I think, is it's really important as far as just, you know, what the cost of housing is.
So what would be the minimum you need to be middle class, you think?
I think, you know, again, it's a question of what do you define as middle class? Do you have to have cable? Do you have to have a cell phone? Do you have to have an internet? Do you have to have what do we define? We don't have any. I mean, we have internet. We don't have a lot of other things. But I tell my kids we're rich because we have you. And we put it into their education.
What's the family income, roughly?
Roughly in about 140.
Right. So that, and with five kids and Tarrytown values of real estate, there you go. Monique, thank you. Chris in Richmond Hill, we got 15 seconds for you. Hi, Chris.
How are you?
Okay.
I just want to reiterate pretty much what the young lady just said. I mean, I live in Nassau County, and my wife and I have a family of four, and we're making $190,000. And we're barely getting by on, you know, on that within Nassau with the property taxes that currently exist.
Right.
So it's interesting that you would classify a middle class as, you know, 250,000 on Long Island. That may be upper middle class, if even that.
Chris, thank you very much. And of course, we didn't even, and our time is already running out, Professor Frank. But we didn't even get to what, you know, the difference between working class and middle class. We've been looking at the difference between middle class and wealthy. But there we go. This debate goes on. You want to give me a 10-second last thought?
Yeah, well, by the standards of the callers, if you're literally middle class in the sense of being right in the middle of the income distribution, you're not able to make ends meet at all by that standard.
Robert Frank, author of Falling Behind, How Rising Inequality Harms the Middle Class. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Brian.
Tomorrow, issue 12, Social Security and Medicare.